listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast, episode 113, The Box Trolls. Oh, Mason, where art thou? One of the best ways to support the Animation Addicts Podcast is by using our Amazon affiliate link, rotoscopers.com/Amazon. You are really able to find anything, anything you could your heart's desires, like art books,
or a box, and trolls.
More box trolls!
Or a box for your troll.
Yay! Make sure to check out rotoscopers.com/Amazon. Hello, my name is Chelsea Robson, and this... Sorry. Go.
Let's just start all over. We're out, threw off our groove. Mason threw off our groove.
Seriously. My name is Chelsea Robson.
And I'm Morgan Stradling.
And you're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers. We are so excited we are together.
Yes. Mace, we are Mason-less, which has not happened in a long time. So if you are new to the Animation Addicts Podcast and you're like, who is this Mason guy they keep talking about? Mason is the star of our show.
Basically.
We love Mason. I was talking to Chelsea earlier today. I was like, man, we really got to step up our game because we're not going to have Mason here. But
it's true.
Mason is amazing and we're really sad that he's not able to be here. However, the show must go on. We are Chelsea and Morgan, or Morgan and Chelsea. Maybe we switch bodies. And we're here joining you for the Animation Addicts Podcast, where we are talking about a movie called The Box Trolls. Now, The Box Trolls is an amazing film, and this was actually selected by one of our patrons on Patreon. So, for those of you, again, who are new to the show, our show basically covers all things animation, past and present, and we review animated films, at least at this point in time. When eventually we review every single animated film that has ever been released, then we'll move into other things. But we do dabble in other things from time to time. But one of the perks of being a patron is that they get to select what movies we review, and I was really excited when they selected The Box Trolls, because The Box Trolls had a lot of hype leading up to it, and I was very impressed when I saw it multiple times. And again, watching it this time.
They've got the whole world in their hands. 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 They've got the flowers and the trees in their hands.
That was the first thing that I remember about this movie, was that first commercial, that first trailer that they pulled out, where basically it was just showing everybody the innards of the movie. Like, they showed them how they made it. They had all of the props. They didn't show anything about the story, nothing about the story. It was all about, this is what we do. This is Laika. Everything is real. You can touch it. And we make movies with our hands. And I loved that part about this movie.
Yeah, see, the first trailer that I remember seeing was the one where it says, some families have a mom and a dad. Other families just have one mom and no dads. So other families have this and that, and they show all these different variations of families and what they could be, and some have a fat aunt who loves to eat cheese, who's smelly, and some families, you know, don't have any parents at all, and they have boxes. And so I remember that being one of the first teaser trailers that they released. And this film leading up to it had a lot of hype because first off, we're talking about a Laika film, and Laika is an incredible studio. They focus specifically on stop motion animated films, which is not necessarily a lost art form, but it's not as prominent as even CGI or 2D. It's kind of the lesser cousin or sister of those. And so Laika really has made a name for itself in being that studio to really push the boundaries of not only stop motion, but of animation in general. I think the types of stories that they tell are very interesting, and they're not the status quo, and they're not what, you know, you would define as animation. If you were to randomly pull 100 animated films together, you're not going to find a lot of elements that in those that are similar that you would find in Laika films, I guess. So
yeah, that's true. My favorite thing in preparation for this podcast was I went in and I was really interested in the CEO of Laika, and his name is Travis Knight, and I was going through and. Because the reason why, I mean, first off, it's a brand new company, you know, less than 15 years old. So it's very, very new. And this is only their fourth movie, or they're making their fourth. Was this their fourth?
It was Coraline. Well, they did
Coraline, then Paranorman, then Box Trolls, and then now they're on their fourth, which is Kobe and the Two Strings. Okay. So it's very new. And yet you look around and there's so much of a following that they have. and everybody that is a follower, they're very much, I'm a Laika fan. I love Laika. Laika's great. Mm-hmm. And that's how it is. And that is something that so many studios can't ever get to. They'll never have that because, and I was like, why is that? And all of the director's commentaries and, you know, all of the different things that I watch, they always looked back to Travis Knight. And so that was probably the biggest thing is you look him up. And so he's the producer, the CEO, and the lead animator on all of the films. So that's...
Yeah, he has a lot on his plate.
a lot on his plate. But I think of all of those talents that he has, his biggest talent is casting the vision of where he wants his company to go.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the... get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
And I think that was something that I found just so incredible, just watching everything about just, and then I watched some of his interviews mm-hmm. and just like his demeanor is very focused. It's very much, this is what I want. And not in a overbearing way at all. It's just more of very blinders on. This is what I want. This is my vision. This is what I see. And I think that that is one of the main reasons that so many people, not only in the company, are drawn to the company itself, but to the movies themselves. Mm-hmm. Like, the content shows that.
Yeah. When you have a CEO that really is kind of the name face of your brand, it helps to personify the studio. You know, you have Walt Disney, where Walt, and it was his vision. Mm-hmm. Even John Lasseter with Pixar very much is this hero to Pixar fans because he is this beacon of light and this guiding light for people. And Travis Knight is in good company in being able to do that. And it's no wonder that, you know, Laika has such a great following. So, yes, very, very exciting there.
One thing that I learned about it, though, and I was thinking, because not all... Those are some qualities that can be learned, for sure. But some people, they come a little bit more natural than others. And I was looking more into him. It was actually found out that his dad was Phil Knight, who is the CEO and founder of Nike, like the tennis shoe. And so he was obviously grew up with that type of a CEO example in front of him, but didn't want to go make shoes for a living. And so he was like... He talked about how when he grew up, he just wanted to go and play with these things and make these movies, but he wanted to be an animator, but he couldn't really draw. So this is what he would do. Mm-hmm. And so what happened was Phil decided that he would help him. And so Phil is actually the owner of Laika mm-hmm. and was the original fronter of all the money, which I thought was fantastic because it really could be an artist-run company. They didn't have to go to hedge funds. Mm-hmm. They didn't have to go to executives. Yeah. They didn't have to, you know, kind of talk to anybody else to do what they really wanted to do. And luckily, all of their movies have paid off. So
yes.
That's, I mean, if it hadn't been from that beginning one, if Coraline hadn't paid off so big, and it really was their biggest one, then I don't think it would have been
Studio jiggling, as we like
yes.
to call them.
I don't think it would have stayed around.
Yeah.
So
very cool. Yeah. And another reason why they are headquartered in Oregon, because that's where Nike's headquartered
yes.
is.
For all his life, Eggs and his adopted family have struck fear into the hearts of their neighbors above.
Bookstrows are monsters.
And because they were a bit, well, different, they spend their days happily underground and their nights foraging the streets, safe from human sight. Now,
when I destroy every last box troll, they'll make me the most respected man in this town.
When their lives are threatened,
crash them off, troll!
They drag us away and we do nothing.
No!
They'll find help where they least expect it.
If I agree to help, you have to do exactly as I say. First things first, off with the box.
Stop that!
Come on, Eggs.
Here come the exterminators of justice!
We can fight back!
Ooh! Mmm! Ooh!
Never seen one do that before.
Let's go!
The Box Trolls.
It's a pleasure to meet you.
So the movie, The Box Trolls, was released. I mean, it just feels like yesterday. I feel like we just recently were talking about this film, but time flies and it does not wait for anyone. And so it was released September 26, 2014. Two directors, there was Graham Annable and Anthony Stacci. And so Graham, it was his first time directing, and Anthony, he was a co-director. He also was a director, co-director on Open Season. So budget, another thing that Leica is able to do is they're able to keep their budget down, surprisingly. You know, you think, okay, I'm working in the physical world with physical media. It probably would increase the scope of the project. But their budgets are very small compared to most CGI and even traditionally animated films. So $60 million budget.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros. Two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
It's kind of maybe on the high side for them
a
little bit.
Well, I mean, as far as the medium itself, it's kind of high.
Yeah.
Because you look at, like, Shaun the Sheep was made this last year, and it was only $25 million budget. And then Frankenweenie, which came out the same year, was $39 million. But Paranorman and Box Trolls are both at about $60 million. So they've kind of found their sweet spot as far as this is how much money we are going to be putting into films. Mm-hmm. Which, like I said, high for the medium, low for the animation in general. Mm-hmm. But they made it work.
So they made $109 million worldwide, mm-hmm. which coming off the end of Star Wars, or even the beginning of Star Wars, where it did that not like almost in a day, basically, more than that in a day. Well. It did a lot.
It did a lot.
I'm trying to think. I think Thursday night's totals were combined with... Anyways, Star Wars is just blowing everything out of the water, basically. Right. And so I look at this and I'm like, $109 million, like for your whole theatrical run is not that great. However, it did break that $100 million
comparing.
Mark. Yeah, when you're comparing the behemoth of Star Wars.
That's not fair.
It's not anywhere near what even some of the worst Pixar films have done.
Oh, no.
But nonetheless, it did, you know, was able to make money back, which continues the studio to go forward. But it's interesting because there's so much love for Laika, but it doesn't seem to be a film that necessarily has, or a studio that necessarily does these blockbuster films that just explode. Everyone sees them. Everyone's talking about them. Definitely, as is the medium of stop motion that they're working in, very niche. And I think that might just because stop motion films in general don't do as well as traditional or CGI, which is kind of a shame because I loved this movie. I thought everything about this movie was expertly done and almost a masterpiece. So
yeah. Here's some fun factoids for you. First off, if you want to go find more information about it, definitely the DVD was Blu-ray. All of those are fantastic resources just to find out a little bit more about not only the medium, but also the company itself. Yeah. And then also you can find online, there's a making of the Box Trolls at Google. You know, the directors came and they're like, hey, we're going to teach these five people that showed up for my discussion. I was like so mad when I watched it. I was like, there are like 50 open seats in there. Why aren't I there?
Yeah, I'm going to include a link to, let's see, we did a video review of the Blu-ray, a written review, and then we have a video review of the film and a written review of the film, in addition to a written review and a video review of the art book, which I, as preparing for this, used all of those resources. I went back to my reviews. I went back and watched some of the bonus features and watched the film, which was on Netflix, which made it very, very easy.
Yeah.
Almost everyone has Netflix nowadays, at least in the States. And the art book especially, I would very, very highly recommend because I feel it went even into some areas and avenues that we didn't even explore in the bonus features of the actual, you know, DVD home media release. So all of these together, I think, are a must-have, especially for the director's commentary, where, I mean, if you love this film, you love this medium, you love this studio, all of those you have to buy. So
yeah.
I'll include links so you can support the show in doing so. I'll not only include links to read those reviews, but to actually purchase if you're interested. So
soundtrack was good, too.
Oh yeah. We actually have the soundtrack. So we didn't actually talk about this, but Chelsea and I are in the same physical space.
Yeah, hey, guys.
We mentioned that if you're watching the video, obviously you know this, but we mentioned that Mason was gone and that kind of was the big thing. But another big thing is that Chelsea and I are recording this podcast together. And already I love it so much more than our normal means of doing this just because I feel like our interaction is just so much more immediate. The reason I mention that is because one of our patron rewards is we have this thing called the Animation Treasure Chest, where, you know, we get sent a lot of stuff to review, and some things we don't get to, we don't request them, and I have no interest in reviewing certain things, so they kind of sit on my bookshelf, which is a bit empty right now, but part of the Animation Treasure Chest was the Box Troll CD, so that is something in there that someone could pick if they are selected as a winner. Anyways, fun little factoid.
If you'd become a patron, and you'll be able to be entered into that contest.
But the music was so good in this film.
Yeah.
Because when I was rewatching this film, I felt that the score was just, it just took me back to my initial viewings of this film, and it really did do a great job to create the mood. Now, Chelsea had something very interesting that she wanted to do, but due to time constraints, we could not do, but it was her homage too.
Yes. Well, okay, so you guys, if you remember watching it, so one thing that I thought was super great was, I mean, they were so aware not only of the story, but also of the soundtrack as well, that they implemented different parts of the soundtrack, very unique parts of the soundtrack, into the film itself. For example, if you're watching and as there's one montage where, you know, where Eggs is growing up and it has a fish right next to him and he's playing a melodic saw.
The best kind.
The best kind. Everyone should own a melodic saw. I happen to have one, and I was not able to bring it today because I was going to start out the podcast with me playing the melodic saw. It's my mother's, you know.
Gosh, bless her.
The things that you find at my house will always surprise you.
She is quite a connoisseur and quite a protege. The melodic saw.
She does quite well. Her favorite song is Home on the Range.
An American classic.
It's amazing, yes. And then Christmas time rolls around and she always pulls out, what is the song? I'm dreaming of a white Christmas.
Ooh, yes, bet you've never heard that rendition before on the saw. Mm.
So everyone needs to have a melodic saw. That's really what it is. But point is, like, I thought that was so amazing because they have to create these things so far in advance. And to be so aware of even the musical and instrumentation of the score that they wanted in here to be able to put a prop of a melodic saw was pretty, I mean, that just goes to show you how much of a vision mm-hmm. all of these movies are. They're, everything is just kind of wrapped around itself.
Yeah, I also loved the Italian barbershop quartet, mm-hmm. which, you know, was for... Just to talk about the film, basically, the box trolls, they are quite simply trolls that inhabit boxes, hence their name, and they're a bit scavengers. They live in the underlings of society. They kind of live in the sewers. They have this own little place that they create, and they are kind of tinkers, like Tinkerbell. Mm-hmm. They love to tinker around with things and build. They love gadgets, so they do go up to the surface of the streets, and they're able to find different pieces of...
You went up to the surface again.
Yes. Didn't you? Didn't you? They find mechanics and different innards of different things, and then create stuff out of it, which is really exciting. And one of these things that they find in one of their dumpster diving adventures is this soundtrack, or this old record for a barbershop quartet. And I just loved even that. It's your classic montage series or sequence. And that actual recording mm-hmm. Is the one that we hear as... And I just loved it. I thought very unique choices mm-hmm. in the score overall, so...
Mm-hmm. Okay. I have here a list of... In my research, I have a list of...
According to my research.
Yes. This is... That's probably the most... quoted TV quote we ever use.
Yes. Magic School Bus. Nerdy Girl.
Nerdy Girl, yes. So I found 12 box troll facts that you probably didn't need to know. Sound music. All right, and Morgan and I are going to go back and forth on these. And we're going to start out with the film is 87 minutes long, which equals 5,220 seconds, which equals 125,280 frames.
All done by hand, ladies and
That's
gentlemen.
A lot of picture taken.
Mm-hmm. So, number two box troll fact that you probably didn't need to know, but we're going to tell you anyways. There were 330 people on Laika's crew, not counting voice actors, sound engineers, and other people who worked at other facilities. So just on the actual set location.
Yeah.
330.
It's a lot of people. All right. Number three, the production period totaled 72 weeks.
Including, this is once they start filming,
yeah,
right?
Once they started filming, it's like to the end.
Yeah, and something interesting is that I think... When I imagine how stop motion is done, it's just like, we're working on this one scene. And it's not. It's just like any other animation mm-hmm. studio where you have, you know, legions of animators who are all working on different scenes and whatnot. This is the same thing. They just mm-hmm. have actual physical sets in their studio, which, you know, this guy's working on this scene, this guy's working on that scene. So, yes. Nonetheless, all these people still took 72 weeks. Mm-hmm. Number four. The whole Laika studio set is on about 3.5 acres.
That's big.
That is quite big.
That's quite large. That's a lot. All right. Now, next we have more than 20,000 props were handmade for the movie.
Very nice. Next one, there are 14 different fabrics on Lord Portlyrhine's white hat, which is crazy.
I mean, the hat is probably, like, this big.
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, and I'm thinking, like, 4 or 5 inches-ish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because these characters, these maquettes are quite big.
Right.
In themselves. So, and those hats, likewise,
they go up.
Very big. 14 different fabrics, all sewn by hand.
That's so much detail. It's incredible.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
5-1-0, declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Next up, the movie's smallest prop was a tiny sewing thread and needle.
Let's see. Elle Fanning and Isaac Hampstead Wright, who are the voices of Winnie and Eggs, they share the same birthday, April 9th.
Ooh, coincidence? I think not.
I think not.
The song sounds distinctly Monty Python-esque because they were written by Eric Idle himself. Well, yes. There we go.
If you're a fan of Monty Python, you're like, oh, it's him, yes. Obviously. Google him. You'll be like, oh, it's him, obviously. Yes. And the next one is Foley artists found the source for their sound in some public art on display at a Boston airport. So basically it just consists of metal machines that are doing nothing functional, but it's like an art show gallery that they just kind of started moving things around, and that's where they got the sounds for this movie.
Nice. Next up, the Box Trolls animators made over 1.5 million different faces for the characters, which never would have been possible if it weren't for 3D printing.
Yes.
So that's one thing that's really interesting about how Laika works and stop motion, how it has progressed with technology, is that they use 3D printing to print all the different variations of the faces. And instead of actually swapping the head out, they just swap the face, or sometimes, you know, the bottom. Sometimes they're in two parts. Sometimes the whole face. Sometimes they just swap out the eyes will leave the mouth, or vice versa. So 3D printing is amazing, and I think it's so cool that it's utilized in animation that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they talked about how in the Box Trolls they even got color, which before it was just like plain you know, plasticky materials, but as progressions went on, they started improving their 3D printers to actually add color, which was like nice. All right, and then the stop motion frames burning in the furnace at the very end are courtesy of a working iPad on display on a loop of the video in the mouth of the device. So basically that same video, I don't know for sure, but think about it as that video that you turn on YouTube that is like the Yule log. They just have the Yule log playing on the inside of that just to add it all. That's ingenious.
Very nice. So there you go. 12 facts that you probably didn't need to know about the Box Trolls, but now you know. And with that, until next time.
Well, we're actually going to go into the full movie now. Little boxes on the hillside. Little boxes made of ticky-tack. Little boxes on the hillside. Little boxes all the same. There's a pink one and a green one and a blue one. I really liked at the very beginning when they opened up the scene how they set up the importance of the white hats, and they set up the importance of actually why Snatcher wanted it and what was his motivation through the whole thing. I really liked that.
Yeah, so one of the biggest things that stood out to me initial viewing, multiple viewings, and even this viewing is the theme of status symbols, hierarchy, class, and very clearly I think this film does a great job of making that very visceral. So not only are the themes very able to be understood, you know, when they're talking about it or, you know, through the dialogue and the plot, but through the visuals of the actual movie. So one of the things the art book talks about, the art book is not presented in a way where, okay, we're going to talk about characters, then we're going to talk about landscapes, then we're going to talk about this, then we're going to talk about special effects. That's how a lot of art books are laid out. This one was laid out in the different way of the different class system of Cheesebridge. Because you see in the city, it's very, you know, it's a pyramid and you have to climb to the top, and the white hats are at the top. Next up are kind of the more common people, and that's where Snatcher and his gang are. And their aspiration is to climb up to where the white hats are. And then even, you know, then there's the city and the people and general denizens of Cheesebridge. And then even below that are the Box Trolls, which are not accepted by society. They are seen as monsters and thieves and kidnappers, basically. And so that's how the art book is set up. And I thought that was just a very clever, ingenious way to talk about it, because you're able to hit all the main points through that. But I think that is one of the main overall structure of this film is this: what is class? What defines you? Who are you? The symbols that define us in society. Mm-hmm. And white hat from the very beginning is something that they did a great job saying, this is something that I aspire to. Mm-hmm. And it's this white hat. I have a red hat, but that's not good enough. I mean, a hat is a hat in reality, but it's what the hat represents.
Yeah.
And especially to Snatcher, which he went on this adventure. Not on this adventure. I mean, maybe from his side. I love one of the very first lines, like, oh, isn't this the duality of good and evil? Like, those two henchmen.
I love those henchmen.
Were so great. And they could see kind of... They did not want to be bad guys, but in their minds, they were doing good because they were ridding this town of the box trolls. But Snatcher's, his motivations throughout are to climb the ranks and to become a white hat. And I love that because his motivations were not very one-sided of, I want to take over the world. I want the most money in the mm-hmm. world. World domination. It was he wanted to be accepted by society and that high society, mm-hmm. which, you know, he'd probably been wanting to be a part of since he was young. Even going into how the white hats themselves, one of the things that they do, this is a town called Cheesebridge. Everything is cheese related. That joke about milk turning into curds.
Oh, I love that part. And it goes boom. And yeah. Then right away it pans over to the guy who dropped his drum and cymbal. And I was like, that is clever.
And even for the white hats, one of the things, the symbols of that class is that they eat cheese and very fine cheese. Mm-hmm. And I just thought it was very interesting. I'm totally jumping ahead here. That Snatcher, he had this aspiration for something that he's probably wanted for so long, yet it wasn't good for him.
Yeah.
This wasn't what he needed. Okay, sitting there eating cheese with the magistrates was not going to ever bring him happiness.
Right.
Yet
he was allergic to it.
Yes. Yes.
It was everything that wasn't good for him.
Yes. And brought on this terrible rash and infection, and they had to bring the leeches. And, you know, in that very first scene where you see his rash and they introduce that to you, even his closest confidants and henchmen, they know this is not good for him. And yet he yearns for it so much, they kind of just... they try to keep it from him, but they can't because mm-hmm. you want what you want, and whether it's good for you or bad for you. And I just thought that was interesting. We don't ever see him accept that maybe this isn't for me.
He doesn't. He explodes.
No, he literally explodes.
He literally explodes.
But just because it's good for someone does not mean it's good for everybody, right?
Yeah.
So, or even if we do have a great goal in life, sometimes you do need to take a step back and say, is this something that will bring me happiness? Is this something that I really need or want or whatnot? So that's one of the things that I've been thinking about since watching.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of cool things. I mean, you focus on the point of society climbing and mm-hmm. how each one of these people have a goal that mm-hmm. they're trying to get to. Mm-hmm. And even the box trolls, they don't have a goal necessarily other than just to, be the... do their thing. Do they just
exist.
Want, they just want to exist, and they have perfect souls, and they're just so loving. And yet they're the ones that end up with the sins of society, basically. Mm-hmm. And they're cast aside and really pushed under. And I liked how the whole story, basically, Eggs is a boy that was stolen and was basically raised by these box trolls since he was a baby. And now he's 10 years old, and he's been a box troll. And over the last many 10 years, Snatcher has been trying to capture all of these box trolls because, All spoilers here. Mm-hmm. But I loved how they brought all of these stories together. How he concocted the story of that, the boy was stolen and they ended up eating the dad. So when really he captured the dad, put him in a hole and hung him upside down for 10 years.
Torture chamber. Great.
And then basically made a plan that, okay, well, I've put all of my sins on these creatures. I'm going to continue this farce and get exactly what I want out of it by basically telling the head of Cheese Town, Cheesebridge.
Lord Portly Rind.
Basically saying, hey, if I get rid of all of the box trolls, I'm going to get a white hat. Your white hat. And so it's just... it's really interesting how they tied all of these things together and made you really kind of just go along with it. And I love the characters, you know. So we had Elle Fanning, who was Winnie, and how did you like her voice? I liked it.
I love it. I feel that Elle Fanning in this film was a very familiar voice, especially since her sister Dakota had voiced Coraline a few years earlier. And I loved everything about this character, from the voice to the design to how sassy she was to just bossy.
I loved her design. Yes,
and her design was very classic. Like, here's this rich girl with the pigtails. And
even body shape was just like porcelain doll. Like,
it was very appealing.
Yeah.
She, to me, stole the show in every scene that she was in. And I just, even now, I'm like, I want more Witty.
Kimmy Winnie. And then Isaac Hampstead as, I'm sorry, Hampstead Wright as Eggs. I thought that he did a good job, especially over the period of, like, I mean, in a way, the whole movie kind of rested on theirs, both of those together, and how they did. And I felt like both of them did really well. And Snatcher was probably, he had a great voice.
Yes.
I felt the entire time I'm looking around like, who is this guy? But like, I had like four different people in mind as far as who he was, but I was wrong on all accounts. But I mean,
it happens.
I know.
And let's not forget his alter ego, Lady Frufru.
That was funny.
Oh. I loved that.
Yeah.
Just that he had this, you know, again, he is trying to climb the ladder of society, and he has this alter ego where he is, you know, a female, which just basically a cross-dresser, which was amazing.
Your daughter, your granddaughter was a cross-dresser. Good times.
Very good times. And then we have the rest of the exterminators, which out of the three, I liked the little duo pair. And if you stay till the end of the film, there's a little Easter egg with them.
I love that.
Which is basically the camera pans back and kind of breaks that fourth wall. And you see a time lapse of the animators actually animating those two guys as they are speaking that dialogue, which is just really incredible. Loved that scene. And I love those two because I felt that they were the most human. They weren't so one-sided. The little short guy clearly just was all evil.
Yeah. Well, he was kind of like the Ed of the two. Ed? I felt, he didn't really have much of, he was very flat character. Mm-hmm. But the others were like, wait, am I evil? I don't think we are evil, but are we? I liked their process.
Yes. And then we have the box trolls themselves, and I loved, like, this movie had so many great things, you know, from, we talked about the different themes that they're able to portray so visually, to even just characters' names, because that's one thing that you can kind of struggle with in a film, is remembering so many characters' names, and they made it super easy for you. You know, part of the box trolls is whatever box you put on, that's your name. So if you're wearing an egg box, you're Eggs. If you're wearing a shoe box, you're Shoe. Oil can is one of the, so all these really funny little things, and I loved that because
here's my question. How in the world did these boxes stay so together over the course of 10 years. Like, ooh. I've never had a box last that long.
Especially one that gets daily use.
Right.
As apparel.
I don't have shoes that
last
that long.
You know, someone should do that. The next big fashion designer should really look into the box
look is
trend.
In. Way in.
I love the box trolls, and I loved how everyone was different, you know, not only visually but just some were stout, some were tall, some were skinny. Everyone looked different, although they were very androgynous in a way. I'm not quite sure whether they are male or female, but at least I think they tend to lead male. But I don't know about you, I didn't see a single female in the whole bunch. So tell me how this reproduction works.
Maybe they are kind of androgynous. Mm-hmm. Probably. We're just going to go with that.
The androgynous box trolls. You heard it first.
Well, you know, I loved how they, one other thing that I loved is how they discovered that Eggs was a boy. And even the conversation with Winnie and him, how we were just like, why don't you talk like them? I have a speech impediment. You know, like all these weird things that I was like, really, kid? Come on now.
Well, I think we should have like a segment, a new segment to the podcast, which we save till the end of unexplained plot devices or whatnot. And mine in this film is, okay, if the box trolls only speak their trollish language, basically, how does eggs learn English?
A speech impediment.
Yes. I know. They even answer that, but it's like, not buying it. Not buying it.
They're good times. And then there was the part where, you know, you had Winnie and Eggs talking about what a father is, which was another really big part of this plot. And I remember the directors actually talking about how that was one of the main things that they really wanted to get in. But it was one of those devices that they, like, fought for. And they couldn't figure out a way to get it in until they really, really fleshed out the story. And I thought it added a lot. Made it a lot deeper, not just with Winnie, but also with maybe with what Eggs thought of the upper world. And it definitely added kind of a, I don't know, I think I felt like it would have added kind of a duality to what he thinks the upper world is. Like, why would I want to live up there? If, like, that's what your dad is. That's the only father we've got, you know? It was interesting that they threw that in.
Yeah. And, you know, even going along with that, one of the themes of this film is, you know, the boxes that represent us, whether that box is a literal box or a hat or even a box that, such as a title of father. What does a father represent and what does a father do? Even the box trolls themselves have a hard time when the box comes off. Because when Eggs, Eggs takes it off and they become naked box trolls or just box trolls, or just trolls, I guess, they really have a hard time grasping that. Like, you
living
don't have
outside
a,
the box.
Yeah, living outside the box, yes. Thinking outside the box, all of the things. The box things. They have a hard time doing that because the box is so ingrained in their identity. And at the very end, you see how they're able to overcome it because they're going to basically be destroyed. And Eggs is giving them that speech of like, you have to stand up for yourself. And I love it because when you're first watching it, you see the box is all shaking as if they're afraid. They're not going to do it. They're never going to come out of their box. But then they show it again. It's sort of the flashback and you see that they have listened to him and they are exiting, you know, they're leaving the box aside for, you know, the greater good, which is basically to survive and live.
Survival instincts kick in. Yes. Good job.
And then it's not about the box anymore, which is cool because I think this is actually one of the animated films the most that has helped me, that just left me thinking.
Yeah.
You know, there have been a few other ones recently, but this was one specifically that I was always thinking about the themes and the meanings. Now, I recently just saw a film called Norm of the North, which you will see my review on the YouTube channel, but that left me thinking about nothing except for when can I get out of here? 10 minutes in. But that's for another day. But it's great because I think animation does have this stereotype. And the funny thing, going back to that, Norm of the North, I had some friends who won passes. Just they randomly got picked and they happened to be friends. And they took their kids. And I remember afterwards, like, I texted them, like, I am so sorry. I was like, embarrassed that, like, you know,
they won.
Yeah, they were like, hey, this is great. We got free movie. Our kids love it. Like, who cares? They're like, this is kind of what you come to expect with, you know, a kids film. And my heart just sunk. I was like, no, that's not what you come to expect from, you know, by kids film, they mean animation.
Yeah.
Like, that's not, exactly what they should mean. Be, like, our standard that you accept that it's just this trivial fluff that doesn't enlighten you anyway. And I think Box Trolls really does a great job of showcasing that and really, you know, making you think about the duality of life.
Well, and, you know, there's so many industries. It just becomes so hammered back with, is it going to make the bottom line? And I think that's, like I said in the beginning, this is something, like, has such a great place because they are still so on their own. They don't have to bow down to anybody else for the money because they got that money. And they've really been able to kind of stick with the purity of the artistry. But it's, I love seeing any type of movie that really goes out of their way to shoot for the top. They go really out of the way to even, hey, I would love this movie, whatever movie I'm going to make, to be a contender for movie of the year.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I want to see.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's another thing that Laika really tries to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not to say that all, like, Disney or DreamWorks or, you know.
Not saying that should be your goal. There are some films where that is not your goal.
It's just, not your goal. And I appreciate those as well.
Yes, the romantic comedies, the just, you know, the goofy films. And,
yeah.
And, you know, even films designed for kids.
Yeah.
They do serve a purpose and a place.
They
do. But I felt that this one transcended even the box that animation has been put in.
Mm-hmm. We are so good.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. If you case you're wondering what the pause was, it's because I just fist bumped or you know.
Thumbs up.
I was very happy with that one. That's a Mason staple. Mason will always do good tying it back around like that, but not me always. But anyways. Okay. All right. So any last kind of thoughts about this film? You know, talking about it, I loved the look of this film. I loved how grungy it was. Mm-hmm. In the art book, they talk about how, you know, nothing is everything is kind of angular, but it's not straight lines. There's curves and there's squiggles and there's this and there's that. And in the art book, they talked about how one of their lead artists had a kind of a shaky line in his drawing that they were able to interpret into the actual physical models and sets and stages. And I just loved how nothing is perfect here. Things mm-hmm. are wonky, skewed, you know. Even the thing that stands out the most to me is the coloring of the characters and their skin, because it's not very well blended into this mm-hmm. perfect peach color or whatever color. There's literally streaks of blues and yellows and reds. Very
I think you're mostly looking at Lula or Flula.
Snatcher?
Snatcher. Like, Snatcher's coloring is just really crazy.
Even in Winnie's hair, she has very kind of obscure streaks, like a blue she's mostly a redhead, but then like yellow. And I just liked that they were able to even push the color palette and what you expect in from design-wise.
Another thing that kind of came to my mind was when Eggs was coming out of the dungeons, mm-hmm. like he was coming into the real world, and his kind of transformation in that. How I love, first off, I just love the costume that he picks out. The only thing from the above ground world that he knows / likes is this Italian opera quartet.
Yes.
And so he ends up being in a barbershop like outfit.
The pinstripe.
Because this is normal. And then he like has to paint on the mustache and everything because, you know, this is normal. So I felt like that was really funny.
I thought the scenes that really stand out are when you can tell he's a fish out of water. So the first time he's in, you know, the above ground for the first time at that fair and kind of watching
Which
things.
Is for him.
Yes.
Unknowingly. Like, oh, it's my birthday party. Awesome.
It's very much like Quasimodo in Hunchback
it
of
is.
Notre Dame.
Yeah.
You know, out there. He has that moment where he goes out into the square and he is the Festival of Fools.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a lot of parallels to that. I saw a few parallels to Tarzan and the Jungle Book. You know, Mowgli and Tarzan himself, they are raised by these creatures other than themselves, and then they have a moment where they, you know, see their own kind and they have to adapt. And so I like that. I love the ballroom scene. The ballroom is so breathtaking.
It's amazing.
And how many, just the scale that this film has, it is one of the most complex stop motion animated mm-hmm. films ever done. And the ballroom scene alone is just an example of that. I remember thinking, how the heck did they do that? And that's one thing that is great about the bonus features, because it's almost as if they had, you know, a pen and paper that anytime people asked him a question, like, how the heck do you do this? Or how do you do that? They included it as a bonus feature.
Mm-hmm.
So specifically the ballroom scene is included, and they break down and then you see it and you're like, they pull back the curtain. You're like, oh, that's how.
That was known as the hardest scene in the movie. Mm-hmm. Everybody said, oh, I think this one will be the hardest. Oh, this action scene will probably be the hardest. Mm-hmm. But they said when they went into this meeting, this breakdown of all the different departments of seeing what they needed to do in order to make this happen, nobody was even talking. Mm-hmm. Nobody looked at each other. Like, they were just all thinking, how in the world are we going to make this happen? Mm-hmm. And they ended up like just taking so many different options, like how are they going to make all of these, the dancers come in, and how are they going to film it all? And one great thing I like about what Leica is doing is they also not only, they don't stick with just stop motion, but they utilize all of the tools that are there. So they do utilize CG. And this was one of those scenes where they definitely put in CG extras. Mm-hmm. Any of the main scene, like the main people, if they got a credit in the, like, they basically, they were a main puppet, and they were always a puppet. They were never a 2D, or I'm sorry, a CGI character. But any of the people that were just kind of around, like those dancers, and basically anybody that doesn't interact physically with the puppet was CGI. Mm-hmm. And just watching how they put that whole thing together, like when Eggs goes and hides under the girl's dress and is like, they're thinking, how are we going to do this? How are we going to, we have to put these rings around this back of it and make, create this whole new thing. So I just thought of all of the scenes, that was the most difficult to do, which was impressive. Like, it was just like, interesting. You wouldn't think that that would be the scene.
Yeah. So one thing we didn't talk about is that this film was inspired, basically based on a book called Here Be Monsters by Alan Snow. It was originally published in 2005. And the thing about this book, it's not just a little picture children's book. Mm-hmm. It is a chapter book, a novel. It's 544 pages.
Oh my.
It is very, very expansive. And I remember in the, not only in the art book, but in the actual bonus features, they talk about, they had all these things, these great ideas that they wanted to incorporate into the film, and they really had to pare back and just make it the bare bones of a film. And, you know, I think, not that I am one to clamor for sequels very much, but based on what it made it seem was the source material, mm-hmm. and how much just great stuff they had, I think it would be really cool to see a little more, maybe not. You know, I feel like, I take that back. I think I have seen this world. I don't need to see more of this world, but nonetheless,
I can imagine more of
this
world.
I can imagine other cool things that they could have done. So again, we will, this is something that if you, I actually really want to listen to this, so or read this book. And if we have an Audible affiliate link, you can go to rotoscopers.com/audible, and that's where you can go and check out this book, Here Be Monsters, and listen to it for yourself and compare it to the film. If you have listened to it, send us a voicemail. We'd love to hear it. So, closing up, what would you rate this film?
That was interesting, because this is the second time that I've seen it. And here's the thing. I really liked the movie. I loved the aesthetic. And if I were just going on aesthetic, I'd give it a 5. Mm-hmm. Like, that was just, it was amazing. Everything that Leica does is a 5 in aesthetics. As far as the whole vibe, it just wasn't like to my taste as far as like I mm-hmm. want to see all of this mm-hmm. world, but I enjoyed every bit of the movie itself. I'm going to give it a, I'm going vacillating between 3.5 and 4 stars. I'm going to go with 3.5. I think there were just some ways that I didn't feel totally engulfed in. I don't know. That's just where it hit me. Mm-hmm. That's just where it is. I can't even tell you exactly why. But afterward, after the movie was done, I kind of asked myself, what would I rate this? Where do I rate this on my level of, I really liked this film? Mm-hmm. And it came out at about a 3.5, 4, like close to 4. So if I want to go 3.75,
that's allowed now.
It's allowed. So we're going to go there. 3.75.
Perfect. So initially on first viewing, I gave this film a 4.5. I do think one thing that I love about this film is how tight the story mm-hmm. is. I don't feel that there's anything extraneous and weird storylines that they have to introduce or weird characters just for the heck of it. I think everyone serves a purpose, and I love how fleshed out all these characters are. Everyone has very clear motives for the most part out of the main even the father or Snatcher or both, you know, Winnie has her motive. She's not just the girl character that is there, although women are significantly lacking in this film. The mom you see for a brief second.
And all she does is like,
ew. Yeah. And then there's Winnie, and then really that's it. But that's okay. I mean, I don't believe that you should have gender equality in films just for the sake of gender equality. Yeah. If this film only needed to be told from a male perspective with majority of characters being male, that is fine by
me. That's the story they're telling.
That's the story they're telling. So, you know, the funny thing is when we announced that we were doing this film, I was like, okay, cool. But I had a hard time getting myself to want to watch this film for some reason. I think having watched it again, it's just because this film is not fluff. I think this film actually is something you need to pay attention at every moment.
You do.
You can't be playing words with friends or texting or kind of getting lost doing other multitasking things, which you can for other films. Mm-hmm. It's heavy in a way for what it is, and it has a lot of really, really great themes. So, you know, again, rewatching the film, artistry stood out, the design, how every character is very fleshed out, the tight plot, and I'm trying to decide whether I want to rate it 4.5, which is what I originally gave it, or 4. And I think because of the reason that I just have a hard time like getting excited about this movie. Like, I love it in the moment when I'm watching it, but it's not one of those ones that inspires awe and excitement. So I'm going to just say this time around, it's a 4 for me.
Mm-hmm.
The first time it was a 4.5. Maybe if I watch it in a year, it'll be a 4.5 again. But right now, it is just a 4. So...
And you say just.
Just like, is amazing, okay? I hope...
Like, 4 stars. Like, still, that's still an A or B. Is that a B?
B minus, technically, if we're going by that scale.
We're going by that scale, but...
Well, that makes me feel crappy about this. It should be at least, okay, 4.5 if we're gonna rank. Okay, it's a 4 out of 5. But if I were to rank it on a grading scale, it'd probably be an A minus. So
I'd give it a B.
How does that how does that add up?
I
don't know.
We are obviously
again,
great at math here.
All of these are arbitrary in our ratings. It doesn't matter. It's
really
just
doesn't.
Our thoughts.
Sono i versoni più breve che mai ci serpone, il provenone, e son senza dubbio nel mondo le cose più buone.
Thanks for joining us for this episode. Really excited that we were able to review this film. This was one of the patrons' choice, and thank you, Netflix, for making it available. Thank you, first off, Leica, for creating this film, and we're able to, you know, watch, have a lot of ancillary preparation for this film, which I really, that's one reason I really actually, I do love this film.
Yeah.
I'm still holding by my 4 at the point, but I just love how deep everything relating this film, behind the scenes, art book, everything is. So definitely go check those out. Rotoscopers.com/113 is where I'll include all the links to our previous reviews, in addition to links where you can buy all of these various things that we talked about, because they are worth it. It's definitely worth your time.
The art book, I swear, is one of those books. I was like,
Well, and because with the art book, again, with stop motion, it just has this extra level of intrigue in the fact that it is such a different process from what you're used to. It's not just here's a sketch and then here's the sketch realized in a computer or through 2D.
Mm-hmm.
It's here's a sketch and here's how it's realized in the 3D world and with texture and fabric and physical elements. It's so good. I can't stop blushing about that book. So check it out.
Awesome. Also, if you want to send a voicemail to us, make sure to head on over to rotoscopers.com/voicemails. You can also give us a call at 406-646-6575. And we love hearing your guys' thoughts. Make sure to stay tuned to rotoscopers.com. At the very bottom of the website, we always post a schedule of our next episodes. And we are really excited about the lineup that's coming up. If you're on iTunes, make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes. If you're on Stitcher Radio. If you're on the website, find either one of those or just keep coming back to the website. We're good with that. Next podcast, I know that we talked about this on our 2015 episode, but when we did the Roto trivia, next podcast, we weren't able to get as many submissions in this week just because of kind of how everything worked out with timing.
You have more time. We are extending the deadline so you can enter.
So, yes. So we still have the top 3 people that are going to be, that do that, will be getting a free t-shirt. Woo! Woo! Discover seizures.
Yeah.
And then after that, we also have another thing that goes along with iTunes. Morgan?
Yes. So we are going to be highlighting more people who give us 5-star reviews on the show. So if you do leave us a 5-star review, we're going to read one every single episode and just, you know, give a little blurb of something that you say. But in addition to that, anyone who rates us, whether it's a 1-to-5-star review, an actual written review, they're going to be entered into a drawing as a thank you, and we are going to be giving away an art book of your choice, which is pretty exciting.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
We're giving away an art book. Like whatever they want?
Whatever they want, as long as it's still in print.
Okay.
So the epic Art of the Lion King and the Art of Aladdin, some of those old school ones that are
Prince of Egypt? Come on now.
$800 on Amazon. Those are disqualified and not eligible. But if it's still in production and, you know, within a reasonable amount, most art books are around $30 to $40. So that will definitely be included. So if you've had this art book that you've always wanted, you know, hey, let us foot the bill and we will send it to you anywhere in the world, which is pretty cool. So definitely, if you haven't left us a review already, of course, if you've already left us a review, we've done previous contests similar to this, but
you can also update your review too.
Update your review and let us know, and you will be entered into that. So that's something pretty exciting. Just to thank you guys for being listeners of the show and for always supporting us. And again, next week we will read one of those 5-star reviews on the air. And thank you to people who have already left us those. All right. So other than that, you can find me. I am Morgan Stradling on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. At Morgan Stradling is how you find that.
You can find me, Chelsea Robson, that's C-H-E-L-S-E-A-R-O-B-S-O-N, on Twitter. You can also find my website, ChelseaRobson.com. You can also find me on Instagram or Periscope or basically anything that says Chelsea Robson, I'm kind of there.
It's her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The original. The OG Chelsea Robson.
Except on Snapchat, because somebody else took that one. So, yeah. Jerk. Mm.
That's why it's very important to find the new up-and-coming social media and snag your name. Just like Peach, the new hot thing everyone's talking about.
What is this Peach? I must get on.
We will talk about it later, but go snag your name on Peach before someone else does, like that other Chelsea. So, also, we cannot forget our amazing, hilarious co-host, Mason. He brings so much to the show. He will be back next episode. You can find him on Twitter at Mason, S-M-T-X. Also, his blog at thisanimatedlife.blogspot.com.
Woo-hoo.
And thanks for joining us, guys. Next episode is going to be an amazing one, so stay tuned. And until next time, we are the Rotoscopers.
That was a good one.